Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Jennifer Corning, and we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. A cultural phenomenon for over six decades, the artist Kevin Redstar continues to share the beauty, the stories, and the vitality of his birthplace. His works are instantly recognizable, often with their powerful palettes, deepest darks, stark whites, and punctuated with crimson reds. His subject matter is often warriors, shields, teepees, horses, and dancers, themes he wants to capture and depict and honor his ancestors. Kevin Redstar's artwork is internationally known and collected and has held prominence in the Smithsonian, the Whitney, and the National Museum of China, to name a few. Today, we have the good fortune to learn more about this Montana treasure.
Kevin Redstar, welcome to Resounds. We are actually recording in Kevin's new gallery in Red Lodge, surrounded by his works. Kevin, before we talk about this new venture, can we go back to the beginning? And can you tell us about your introduction to art? How did you come about being an artist?
Well, that is a toughie. My life had always been evolved around art. My mother was a seamstress. She designed, you know, crow women's clothes, men's dance costumes for the regalias. And she always had a little studio type on one of the tables in her kitchen. And she had cutouts, she had patterns, and, you know, she had different spools of threads that I'm saying, what is this? You know, but then I'd see the actual outcome of what she had with all the tools that she had on the table. And it was amazing what transformed from the tools that she was using. And also my life kind of revolved around the music a little bit, too. My father was I kind of grew up listening to Hawaiian music. My father really appreciated that culture. He played the steel guitar. And that was part of my life, too, music. And my uncles went to dances with my aunts, you know. And so they were pretty colorful. I'm seeing my aunts and my uncles dressing and getting ready for a dance, a social dance, and with their costumes, with their bells, with their feathers, their roaches, and their beautiful dresses, with elk teeth dress. And so I saw all of that. And that it just stays with you when you're very young. I was very impressed. The thing is, too, I often like to sketch with crayons and pencil and whatever paper I can get. Remember when you were in grade school, you have these little tablets with lines on there. It has that little chief head on the front. I just used so many of those tablets for my creations. And so a creation, I mean, you know, what I saw, you know, my mother's designs, I redrew horses, I drew. There's always horses around. And when we went out as little kids in the summertime, we just spent most of the time by the river. And, you know, the riverbank, it's muddy, it's sandy, and I just get a stick and just do all sorts of, you know, sketches and drawings right on the sand. And all of my friends say, what are you doing? I say, I don't know, I'm just feel like doing this, you know. I'm just gouging into the sand and just creating teepees or buildings or horses or whatever. But I think it was just part of me growing up. I've always just been part of a creative life, I guess, yeah, you would say.
Kevin, that's so interesting. I remember interviewing Juan Quick to See Smith. And she said she remembers, as a very young child, taking a stick and drawing in the mud outside of her house. And that was what she did, and she did it all the time.
I did that too. You moved around, you threw stones in there, and you create a little, you know, like a ripple type, you know, like. That was one of my earlier, you know, directions in the art world, I guess. You know, but when people say, how did you learn how to be an artist? You know, you don't. I never even thought I was an artist until after high school, probably after college or something. You know, I think that term is given to you when you're knowledgeable about your craft. I think so. But other than that, you don't label yourself. The public does.
Because we're in your gallery, surrounded by all these beautiful paintings, I can't help but think about color. But it's not like you're making up these colors and designs and patterns. The Crow culture is filled with color and design and pattern. And you must have seen that everywhere. Parading through history is what I think is often referred to as sort of Crow culture, how proud they are of their costumes.
Every chance I had, I went to these social dances. I think it just, the sound, the drums, the singing, it just moves me, moves my whole body. And just seeing the intricacies of these women's designs on their husbands' or children's dance costuming, it's just fantastic. You know, I take those and I keep those in my memory. And when I'm creating something, I try to pick those off at that particular dance or something that's just really striking. I like to replicate that on a surface, perhaps in a sketch, watercolor, or on canvas. At this time in my life, I have quite a reserve of photographs, you know, videos of different functions that I like to keep and go refer back to when I'm creating. Also, I have a lot of books. I'm always collecting books and photographs. And back when slides, yeah. That's archaic now. Yeah, the slides. I have hundreds and hundreds of slides I took in my travels, so to museums and to dances, powwows, and just different paintings that I've done throughout the years. And I refer back to those also.
I love thinking about that because I've often wondered, looking at your paintings, where you get all the inspiration. But you have just all this information, historical information, of early Crow headdresses and bonnets and dresses. So you use those images for your work.
I do. And I was fortunate. One of my friends, not a friend, but my first cousin, he was given a war bonnet. So he gave it to me, and I still have it. It was given to him by a Kiowa family. And it's a beautiful, beautiful war bonnet. And I have gifts also from, from the Eastern tribes also, Onondagas and Senecas. And also I have a shield from a late Daryl Norman. He gave me a Blackfoot shield, and I keep it in my studio. It's a beautiful shield. And I have collections like that. I do collect, if I have a chance, if they're available, I would pick something up like that for me to have for reference. And I do have a lot of books and magazines that I just keep. And so my little studio is like a little gallery, I guess, or a little museum, I would say. I have, Alcor's buffalo, mounted skulls, elk, deer, and my collection of Navajo rugs. But also, I always use those for props and for my subject matter, whatever I'm creating.
Kevin, I know that you left home just as a teenager to join the inaugural class of the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe. How were you affected by this experience? Tell us about that, culturally, educationally, artistically.
Okay, the experience I had there at it's called the Institute of American Indian Arts. It was open in 1962. The people that organized and created that school, namely a Dr. Boyce, he was involved in an Indian school in Utah, and he collaborated with another professional designer named Lloyd Kivanu out of Scottsdale, Arizona. He was the first American Indian store owner, and he was quite successful. They collaborated, put their heads together and say, because they see so many of their students and people that bring in silver rugs and pottery, and they said, this is amazing. We want to know how it's created, where it's done. And so I guess, you know, through the two, thinking and asking and going to museums and asking other people about how can we create like something like this so it can be kept an ongoing thing. Maybe we can create a school or something, a trade school or something for these young people so they don't lose this craft, like rug making, weaving, the Navajos have, they still do, and silversmithing also, and the Pueblo pottery, and paintings also. And so that's how the school was created, collaborated with the President Kennedy's administration was there. The Udall was the interior secretary there, and his wife were very instrumental. She was very instrumental in helping Lloyd New and Dr. Boyce, and another good friend of theirs, James McGrath. And so I think that's what got it started, you know, people backing in the D.C. and just the different tribal groups that were invited. They, in turn, their agencies chipped in monies, too, to create that school. So it wasn't just free. They thought, hey, oh, you just go, it's a free school. My tribe helped me to be there, you know, by funding it also from the Crows of Psaloga. It was opened up, and then they had agents come to just different places, different tribal groups, and say, we are looking for young people with potential in the art world. Perhaps they want to go into dance, maybe singing, or you know, even writing. As a student, what I found out there was that the information was just so overwhelming. But I was ready for it. You know, a little kid from a little town out of Montana, you know, northern part of the United States, I had no museums or galleries, even in Sheridan, Wyoming, or which was close to our reservation in Billings, let alone Bozeman or Missoula, because we were an isolated little reservation town, and I never had any experience to see anything like that. And we were just bombarded with just these beautiful, magnificent images from all over the world, from China, Japan. Then we saw the masters. We saw all the different, you know, Renaissance art through visuals, through slides and lectures, and they just gave us what the world offered to us. You know, there was about only 150 of us. I just took it all in. What this little kid was seeing back then was just really truly amazing. And we did little trips to museums. You know, Santa Fe, New Mexico is a little, it's small, but it's one of the art centers of the world. And it must have at least a half a dozen major museums there. And we would go there for field trips, and we'd take our sketchbooks and spend all afternoon sketching. And it was amazing for me, you know, to be part of that little group that was being offered all this knowledge. That time that I spent at the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe was one of my earlier stepping blocks that drove me, propelled me into the art world, more so professionally. For me, because I was studying painting, and okay, Kevin, you see what you're doing. These guys are from Los Angeles, and they're using their found objects and creating these things. And like in New York, also in the East Coast, these artists, there was, I think at the time, a movement that was kind of like off the mainstream of, you know, a realism and all this. But it was a contemporary movement that Rauschenberg, Jasper Johns, and the people were creating. And I saw that and said, this is dynamic, you know, this is fantastic. And okay, McGrath, one of my teachers, would say, okay, Kevin, now that you see this, these guys went out on the streets and found these found objects and created something with it. They did. They created these things. And I said, well, okay, now you guys go and pick something from your culture and do something like this, you know, like, and see what you can come up with. And so by that time, I knew a lot of, not a lot, but a few techniques and how to create something that perhaps would be kind of entertaining for me. Okay, it's going to be three-dimensional, but it's going to be on canvas. So I used torn paper, canvases, and I create this huge buffalo robe and things like that, you know, like, but it was just something, having fun and seeing what they were doing, the East Coast and the West Coast. So I was just having fun, you know, so I don't know.
Well, I see in some of your pieces influence from like Diebenkorn. Oh. And, you know, I love the way you talk about not getting too tied into realism and realizing the painting still has to be a painting.
Right.
And you have to, whether it's the background, the color, make it your own.
Well, that is what I wanted to do here, because I wanted to identify my work being from the Northern Plains, Crow Indian art. But I didn't want it to just be like the usual, okay, this is the portrait of a Crow man and a Crow woman, but I wanted to have some fun with it. There's about 500 different tribes in this country, and I did not realize that until I went to school there. And we studied a lot of their designs and their elements and what they do, like the people in Alaska, the Inuits, and they carved on, you know, walrus tusk, you know, ivory, and the Sitka people with their totem poles and their mask. You know, it was just amazing to see that. And they have their particular design elements and forms, too, that they keep and retain. And I saw that. Then you come down to the basket weavers also, like in California and parts of Nevada and Utah. And boy, like, it's just so amazing. I took that all in, like I said, you know, and this is truly amazing for a young teenage guy from Montana, just being exposed to all this. I just had a heyday. I had no idea. It was so amazing. I was still a teenager. But, you know, they introduced this to all of us, you know, within 3 months, per ideas that they gave us. You know, okay, let's just try this. This is printmaking. Printmaking involves, you know, like lithography. Lithography involves stone, inks, you know, and a press, or sometimes, you know, like handheld presses, or sometimes, you know, like mechanical, sometimes electric presses. And I had no idea about those things.
Kevin, you also spent some time at the San Francisco Art Institute. How old were you then, and what was your, was it a residency there?
No. That was a regular school, which unfortunately is no longer in existence, but it was in the Bay Area. I think the structure there was really fine also. That even being a first-year student, you know, like you can, you know, share studios with, you know, people that have been there for a while. And they had about 10 studios for painters and potters and printmakers and stuff. The main thing about the big city was from transitioning from a little town in Lodgegrass to Santa Fe with the adobe buildings, and now you're getting into the ocean for the first time and seeing the big city with all the beautiful, beautiful museums. And so we went to a lot of museums. And the thing about San Francisco, too, what really moved me also was we were invited to go with some of our professors and our teachers to go to the fine art openings. And that was an eye-opener for me. I think my exposure to major museums in San Francisco and going to art openings was really one of the highlights over there.
So, Kevin, you're an artist and an enrolled member of the Crow Nation, and I certainly know that music and art is very significant to the Native American culture. I am just fascinated how in the last 30 or 40 years, there's been such a growth in the talent and the number of artists from Native cultures. I'm thinking of Wendy Redstar, Earl Biss, even young Ben Peace, who hasn't been around that long. But you were sort of at the forefront of that.
Well, for me, going back to Santa Fe was one of the best moves I've made. I came back to Montana, and it was still pretty much not invigorating, or, you know, I didn't see much art at all. MSU in Bozeman and EMC in Billings were doing some really great fine things in the art department with their ceramics, and we had some Rudy Adio and, you know, Mazzullo or Bozeman, and there were some really fine painters and printmakers here too, but for me, I just did not I got used to that, you know, my colleagues, the camaraderie, and I just didn't find that on the reservation or in Montana because I didn't have any friends in those cities, in those towns. So I gravitated back to my old stomping grounds in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and created a studio there. And so I went and I just started painting, you know. And luckily, there was this studio where I was, where I acquired the space. Some of my fellow artist friends were already there, like T.C. Cannon and Doug Hyde was there. And they said, "Hey, Red Star, there's a space being available here if you want it, you know. We'll save it for you." And so they did. It was called the Santa Fe Door Studios. That saved me, got me back in the art world. The thing about that, too, was my friends, we helped each other. When they came to see my work, my collectors, by then I had a few collectors that wanted to see my work, and I started selling art, you know, and maybe $25 here, $150 here, you know, $50, yay! But, you know, that got us going, got me going, and I did good. They weren't really accepting or knew contemporary American Indian artwork, and they weren't in galleries yet at the time. And so we were the ones that were, we pitch in and we go to have a show in Kansas, Oklahoma, you know, L.A., Denver, or Phoenix, and we do that, you know, and that's how sometimes, then that's how we kind of did our networking. We just went out and did it, yeah. And so I think that's what really got us going, you know. So, and it was a new venture for us in the world of art.
We're talking with Kevin Redstart, and Kevin, you have galleries all over the world. I have seen your work everywhere I've traveled, but you've just recently opened a gallery in this little hometown of Red Lodge. Can you tell us why you think it's important to have a gallery in a small town like this?
Well, you know, I was living in Santa Fe, like up until the late 90s. I decided I wanted to come back because, you know, like there were some galleries now in Montana. There were galleries in Bozeman and galleries in Missoula, some galleries in Billings also. So then, you know, I can travel now. I had a car, you know, and then I had a bit of a finance from my sales. And so by that time, I figured, you know, I was looking for a studio, but I did not want to build a studio on the reservation because that's a little bit too close to my relatives. Because, you know, like I wanted some peace. I wanted not peace, but I wanted a place where I could just produce art and not socialize. And I didn't want to go to Billings. I didn't want to go to a big place either because that's just a little too busy for me. Kind of like Santa Fe. Santa Fe is kind of like in between. And so I was driving to Red Lodge to visit some friends, and I drove by this little town called Roberts, and I saw this big studio there. It wasn't a studio, it was an old warehouse, actually. I call it a studio now, but it's an old warehouse. I think it was a construction, a home builder. This building was available, so I liked it. I leased it. And by that time, I was divorced, I'd say. But I was away from my daughters in Santa Fe, but I really wanted them here. And so I invited some friends to look at the space, and, you know, like it was okay. You know, I wanted to see if I can make this a studio, and it turns out that I didn't have to do too much, and I just painted the walls white, and basically that's all I did. The lighting was fantastic, and so I did that. And by that time, I invited my daughters here; they were very young. And so I invited them. They took a look at it. Then we got a little place outside of Roberts here. We lived there. We had horses, and it was really nice. And so then I had a little. My studio was there. My home was there. But then I want to show my work someplace because I don't want to have my studio to be a showplace because, you know, that's where I work. And so we came to Red Lodge, you know, and we looked at the space. We looked at the space here in Red Lodge, and this was before this new space. We had a gallery before, and so that it came up. It's still on Broadway. And so we looked at it. Then it needed a lot of renovating, so we did that, and we got it going, and it was really, really quite nice. Yeah, and that was my first venture in a gallery business, and it worked out quite well. And by the time my daughter got older, my older daughter named Merida, she ran the business. Yeah.
Kevin, I'm wondering, one, if there's something else you would like to add to this interview. Or is there advice that you could offer for young people in Montana that would like to become artists?
Well, you know, I got to tell you, it just has to come from you and from your heart, and you just have to make up your mind. You know, it's not something you just step into and you just say, okay, this is great, tremendous. It takes a lot of effort. But what I did back then, you know, our communication system was just nothing. You know, our telephone system was a rotary phones, you know, and which communicated by letter. And so right now the opportunity is so great if they want to venture into the art world. And you know, you have workshops, you have, you know, you can zoom in on anything, you know, with a computer. Workshops all over the country, but we never had anything like that. And I think it just made me work harder. But I think if you have it in your heart, in your mind, you could have anything that you want, but you have to pretty much make up your mind and do it and stick with it. It's not easy, but you have to want to do it. You have to see the fun in it. You know, it has its down parts. And when I first started out, all my apartments and homes were the biggest space was my studio, which is usually the living room. But anyway, that's it just takes a lot of work, fortitude, and just sticking with it and associating with the right people, like-minded people like I was fortunate enough to have. But that's just what it takes, you know. It's just sticking right in there. If that's what you want to do, investigate it, look at it. Do I plan to do this 5 years, 10 years, 50 years from now? I plan my life, you know, 20 years, 50 years ahead of me, because I wanted to be where I am now. And it happens, but you just have to work at it.
We have had the pleasure of talking with Kevin Redstar, one of Montana's great painters and artists. We'll have more information on Kevin's work online, and we will have a link to your website also. And people on the road, please stop in Red Lodge and visit the gallery. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us on Resounds.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Corby Skinner, Jennifer Corning, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Nauman. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.